We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. We have got Simon Bird of the Daily Mirror on with us today, and that is Charlotte and I, and we're going to talk about Newcastle United's fabulous start to the season and also where this may end up at the end of the season. So good has Newcastle's performance been. We are a podcast that release lots more of these podcasts on Patreon. It ranges from £3 to £8 a month. If you like what we do, come along and join us and listen to lots more of these. Simon, how are you, mate? Are you enjoying life writing about a frankly superb football team?
Yeah, so exactly. It's what a strange season. I mean, it's like we were talking about this the other day, that it's been such a change of mindset for us as journalists, having, and probably you, and you as fans as well, that we've covered and watched such kind of downbeat with stuff with no hope and no energy and no prospect of anything good happening. And then suddenly, you know, last season happens and the revival. And then this season has just been beyond our expectations, really. It's been so enjoyable. And I think, I mean, that's reflected in the atmosphere at St James's Park. But also, from our point of view, they win at home and there's five players queuing up to talk to us after the... not queuing up, but, you know, they're all stopping and telling their stories and telling us what they think. And we're getting interviews all over the shop. So it's been brilliant. It's so enjoyable compared with the last few years. It really has.
What was your expectation, Simon, going into this season? Like, what did you think was going to happen? Obviously, it surpassed all of our expectations. I think that's fair to say. But what was yours?
Yeah, well, I thought, I mean, there was a feeling that it's kind of the end of last year with, what was it, like 13 wins in 18 games, something like that, was unsustainable. And that couldn't continue. And, you know, there'd be a bit of a dip and then we might have to stick with it for a while and give them a bit of leeway to keep the building going over 2 years. But then, you know, we went away with them in Austria in July, and you could see, you kind of feel there was a bit of a change of mood and a change of seriousness and a proper kind of belief coming out in the interviews that we were doing about what they could achieve. Now, that was unproven back in July, and they've obviously, you know, they had a bit of a sticky start of the season. They weren't winning lots of games, but once they've bedded down and got fully fit and started believing in themselves, and they started winning games. And I thought, back to your question, I thought they'd probably like top eight, top nine, maybe even would be like a par for the course season. That was my expectation. And at the minute, it's kind of looking like they can certainly exceed that.
Well, your recent match report, Simon, you opened it with, can Newcastle win the league? That's, you know, and you did go on to answer it pretty emphatically, but just, you know, that in itself, starting an article saying, can this Newcastle side win the league?
Well, it was partly tongue in cheek, because the Gallagher end sang it a little bit, and I'm sure the fans weren't singing it thinking they were going to win the league. They were singing it because it's a great song, and it was a bit tongue in cheek and a bit optimistic and kind of set the mood up. But I don't think anyone thinks they're going to win the league.
Not while that freak Haaland's in the league.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not like the Leicester City season when a lot of the big clubs were like weak, and it was 5,000-1 that Leicester would win it. I mean, Man City are too strong for Newcastle to be challenging them at the moment. But yeah, I didn't think of it. Eddie Howe was then asked the question, can Newcastle finish in the top four? And he said, that's an outrageous question. You know, he doesn't, it's his way of answering it. He doesn't want to answer it. And then we were asking the players, can you finish in the top six? And very much the whole mantra is, we've just got to beat what's put in front of us every week. Take it stage by stage, see where you end up in. Well, it's the end of May now, isn't it? It's not April, May. It's the end of May, so the end of the season. So that was a cheeky question. It wasn't meant seriously, but it was inspired by the crowd's optimism. But if you want to get into sort of what is achievable this year, that's the big question about Newcastle. And it's not just got us talking as people who cover it and fans. It's got the entire nation covering it. I mean, my boss in London was asking, should we do a big debate on whether Newcastle can finish in the top four? And all the writers had to chip in on it. And, you know, the conclusion was possibly not this year, but hey, you never know. It is on the agenda, I think.
Well, really interesting, actually, that you reference other teams, because I think one of the reasons that I think Newcastle will at least be in the conversation for the top four come the end of the season, injuries dependent, is that if you look at some of the other teams, they're not very good. Spurs have got all sorts of issues. You know, they're kind of being kept alive with 95th minute winners. A lot of their fans are starting to wonder whether the way that Conte plays, you know, compared to someone like Newcastle United, for example, it's extremely regressive. Chelsea, new manager, it's almost like a write-off season for them. I'm sure they still expect top four, but, you know, they're in all sorts of trouble there. Again, a lot of, like, really slim victories. And then Liverpool, where do you even start with Liverpool? So it almost feels to me, and, you know, Charlotte, I'm keen on your thoughts on this as well as Simon's. I mean, let you fight it out for who answers first, but... I almost feel like there might not be a better chance than this season, because next season Newcastle could be a much better side, but then you're relying on all of those teams, those three teams, Man United aren't great either, having similarly terrible seasons. It almost feels like this season could be the season. It might have to be the season. What do you think?
I'm going to go first, Simon. You might be the special guest, but I'm butting. I don't think that this is the only chance we're going to have to finish top four or, you know, top, you know, three, let's say it. I don't think it's going to be the only chance. I don't think that's why the group that bought the club. I don't think it's why some of the players are at the club. I think it could be harder in the seasons to come. I will concede that. But I think we're still going to be in the conversation. I think it's just where we are now. Yeah, it's faster than we expected, and that's kind of hard to get your head around and kind of hard to almost like admit, because then when you say it out loud, do I sound like a deranged fan? But everything in front of me looks like we're just going to kind of continue strong.
I agree with what you're saying, Alex, that it's a season of massive opportunity for Newcastle, and I think they'll probably know that within the club as well, and the players, and a lot of clubs, and you get this odd season, maybe four or five, in a cycle of 4 or 5 years, you get a season where there's clubs having to rebuild, like Liverpool are well off it, and yeah. Man U have got a new manager, and they're kind of hitting a gear now, which is working, but they are in a season of transition, and Chelsea have got a new manager, and they've had to change, and they've had injuries as well. And they're usually rock solid second or third. And Spurs aren't massively attractive, but they have improved under Conte, so they're still contenders in there. Arsenal have kicked on, so they're sensing an opportunity as well. They're kind of on the up and looking for a challenge for the title even. So it is a massive opportunity. And there was an interesting comment from Darren Eales when we saw him as a press pack about 3 weeks ago, and he did reference that Leicester season where he said, look, you know, who you can't plan. You can't plan scientifically for progression in a football club because you don't know. There's so many variables. There's injuries. There's form. There's managerial, quirks, and other teams as well. So you can't plan scientifically. And he referenced that Leicester 5,000-1 title-winning season. And he says he actually said you never know. So even right at the top of the club, someone's saying you never know. So I wouldn't. You get criticised for like kind of looking ahead too much and. Kind of being a little bit too ambitious for a club that's rebuilding, but it's not unrealistic to do that. And actually, being a football fan is about dreaming as well, and you've got to have the dreams. And this is a season of that Newcastle fans at this moment can have dreams, and that's not an unhealthy, deranged, like Charlotte said, deranged fan thing. That's the natural thing, and it's what football gives you, and what lifts the mood of the city, and what inspires players as well, because they're being inspired by what's happening at the club at the minute. They're all raising their game, so that dream thing is what Newcastle has been missing for the last 10 years. No one has been able to dream at all. And it's been functional and within a budget. And we've all known pretty much what we'll get, survival or up to 10th. And that's been it. So forgive Newcastle fans and journalists covering the club for maybe getting a little bit carried away and a little bit dreamy. But that's the position we're at now. And the good thing is, none of it looks a fluke. Like Charlotte says, you know, other teams are up and down. Newcastle put a team on the pitch and then maybe tweak two or three positions and they win. And it doesn't look like it. The system works. You know, they all know their roles in it. They're squeezing the life out of teams with that high press, which is brilliant to see all the players 40 yards up the pitch from where they used to be under Steve Bruce. And the system works, you know, and I'm so surprised that, you know, Spurs hadn't worked out that their defenders were going to get chased down and panicked in their own box by Newcastle. They've been doing it all season. So team, when does someone work Newcastle out? I don't know. It's bizarre that other managers haven't worked out how to counter Newcastle's tactics.
The thing is, I think that they might have worked out, but that's just not how they train and not how they play. And they might be able to, you know, Villa tried to contain, like squeeze us and contain us, but they could only manage for about 40 minutes to frustrate us. Teams don't have the athleticism because how, I think, trains our players with such high intensity and with such, like, they're so fit now. Yes, that there's a fine balance between how fit they are and then an injury, I think, but at the moment, touch all the wood in my house, everything's okay. I think teams have worked out. I think they know what's going on, they just don't, like, haven't worked out or don't have the time to combat it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe the Newcastle players are just a better outfit and they're fitter and stronger. And you're right, the Aston Villa game was a perfect example whereby a team kind of stifled Newcastle a little bit and there wasn't much in the game and they got in behind and created their own chances. But then Newcastle's fitness kicked in, didn't it? You know, in that last bit of the first half and then certainly in the second half, the relentlessness of this team really punishes people.
I can't tell you how satisfying it is for me as a fan to see and recognise those performances from other clubs. So Everton come to St James's Park and they kind of tell themselves it was a tight game, Newcastle are a good side, we did all right, didn't have a shot. Villa turn up and it's like, well, it was 0-0 on 45, you know, and if this had gone our way, that had gone away, didn't have a shot. And I've been there so many times as a Newcastle fan where you walk away from these better clubs, having lost the game, kind of convincing yourself that if this had gone this way, whereas now on the other side, I can see that those big teams and their fans were just like, yeah, they were shit. it was difficult for 45 and then we scored and then we won. And it's like very nice to be on the other side of that with good players doing good things. And like you said, you know, I thought Spurs under Conte might have gone five at the back to try and exploit Newcastle's kind of narrow formation and Everton I thought would do the same. But it's almost like that you both alluded to, there's not really much point other teams trying to mess with what they're doing too much to get at us, because a bit like Sven Botman, the whole team just doesn't have a weakness. Like, what's our weakness? When Callum Wilson's out, you know the weakness, but we don't have a single weakness. Like, the weakness should have been the right side forward position. Everyone coming into this season was like, we've got one weakness. It's the right side forward position. It's not strong enough. And it's proved to be the strongest position on the pitch. And that probably talks to me about just the strength of Eddie Howe as a manager and improving what he's got. You see him fairly regularly, I imagine. Simon, you get to speak to him. You know, just some, you know, your thoughts on how this season, you know, what have you picked up from him? How has it been dealing with him? Just tell our listeners a little bit about your relationship with him.
Yeah, we see a man who is, I mean, it's been said before, but he's totally dedicated to the job. I mean, he literally is a train spotter football manager. Every detail he wants to know and he's in control of. And I feel, kind of the thing about Eddie Howe is, I feel a bit sorry for him because you wonder if he's actually enjoying it because he's so focused on getting to a destination, which is kind of far away and untouchable at the moment, at the end of the season, and can they win something, which is desperately what he wants to do. And they win these games, and I think he probably has like 5 minutes where he's loving it, and then he's thinking of the next game and worrying about it already and what he's going to do. And I hope there comes a point where he says it, we've asked it himself, do you enjoy it? And he doesn't massively enjoy it because he's thinking about it so much. And he thinks the time to enjoy it is when he's retired or when he's left the club. But I think there must be part of him which is which is loving what's happening at the moment because of all the qualities that, we're all aware of now after being in charge for a year next week, I think it is. His dedication to the job, his love of the detail, his tactical awareness is brilliant. He's kind of, we've got one of those managers who was early 40s, 44, and he's a guy who's on the up. We've not gone for a manager. Newcastle haven't gone for a manager who's proven, done it, like a Mourinho or something like that. This guy is learning with the club and growing with the club. And one of the reservations about him was maybe he's not box office enough, and that's why they went for Unai Emery. Well, 2 weeks ago, you've got Eddie Howe defending my club against Jurgen Klopp, what Jurgen Klopp's saying, and he's taking other managers on and other big managers in a very kind of low-key, discreet way, but he's standing up for his club. And the Eddie Howe of last year wouldn't have had the kind of the confidence, not the confidence, but kind of the, I don't know, the aura or the persona to do that. But he's certainly grown into the job in the last 12 months.
Going to break now for some short adverts. If you want to listen to these shows without the ads, join us on Patreon. It's just £3 a month for the ad-free shows. Cheers.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
I wondered if he was enjoying it. I said this to somebody recently. I was like, I hope he is. I hope he stops to take stock of where he's got us to and the amazing job that's been done so far. Because, and like you know, because it is a bit of a pinch yourself moment. We're fourth in the league. We're smashing goals past year. Like, it's just amazing. And that's down to him and his coaching staff, really. Like, yes, we've made some big signings, but the players we already had are vastly improved. So I really hope he is. I hope he's listening. I hope he's having a nice time.
You know, it was this time, well, not this time last year, but just after he joined, and a lot of the conversation was he can't organise a defence. And, like, it's one thing proving people wrong. It's another doing what he has done to that. Line of thought, because Newcastle are a defensive machine. I saw a funny tweet earlier, I think, from Two Mouth Time, which said the reason Nick Pope isn't up for save of the month in the Premier League is because he simply hasn't had to make a save this month. It's like, it's true, isn't it? It's true. Like, the bloke wants to get in the England squad, and he can't show what he can do because he's just stood there. He's like got the best seat in the house watching the beauty in front of him unfold. But back to how, you know, Charlotte, me and you've talked about before, we've been a bit worried about him. He says he works 12-hour days, so he doesn't see the kids, he took the kids on holiday, just talked football.
like he needs a half term or something. You know, he needs a game off. He needs like some kind of time to himself. Maybe he'll do what, you know, Alex Ferguson's done and Jurgen Klopp's done. When we win the Club World Cup, they've just kind of taken that week off type thing in the league. They've let their number two other academy manager take the game.
Yeah, but didn't he say, like, even when he was on holiday in America this summer, it was just, like, call after call about, like, business with the kids in the car?
He did. The top of the water slide as well. Yeah.
He needs to go somewhere where he doesn't get a signal.
Exactly. No, it is like that. I mean, but I think that's what comes with the charity as a football manager, and he'll get paid a lot of money to do it, and I think his wife probably understands it, and you grasp the opportunity for 2, 3, 4 years, however long it is, and there's a lot of inconvenience for that, and I think you probably will get a week off when the World Cup starts, when all the players not involved in the World Cup will be sent away for a week just to recharge and have some family time and stuff, and then they'll get back into it gently and then do a mini pre-season, so there will be a bit of downtime there, which hopefully won't disrupt the Newcastle machine too much when it all kicks off again.
It looks, Simon, like Newcastle are at least the seventh best team in the Premier League this season. You know, the only other real competitors for that spot, you maybe say Brighton or Brentford. And, you know, Villa, Leicester, and to an extent West Ham are all having really difficult seasons. So it looks like Newcastle, all being well, will be playing in Europe next season. Do you think it's fair to say, if the conversation we've had here for 17 minutes, would seventh place now be a bit of a disappointment, you know, because of the things that we've said? I'm not trying to lead us. I think we'll finish fourth, so I'm not saying we're going to finish seventh. But, like, you know, the chances are there this season to really make a mark, like you've said. Is seventh place possibly now seen as a little bit of a wasted season?
No, I wouldn't think it would be a wasted season. I think that gets you into the Europa Conference League and a kind of second-tier UEFA Cup kind of scenario, which West Ham are in, which I'm covering tonight. Which wouldn't be a disaster at all. But I think everyone has a baseline as to what they would like from this season in their heads. And I think that's probably gone up from ninth, eighth to probably like minimum seventh. And it would be I think from what the start they've had, a third of the season gone, it probably is the bare minimum that you'd want from this start and this platform that they've got themselves. Especially with rivals like Leicester, like you said, Leicester, West Ham, Villa. That's the place that other teams just outside the elite top six are kind of vying for. And those traditional rivals or people who've dipped into it last few years have drifted off a little bit. West Ham being in Europe, it's a huge extra demand. But sixth or fifth, I would be seriously looking at Carabao Cup. I mean, that's a massive opportunity early. Pretty much mid-season to now, you know, win the game next week, and then just before the Premier League kicks off in December, if you can win that one, you're in a semi-final, and then that's a route to Europe as well. And it's a very good route to Europe with big clubs, elite, the top, the traditional top six, distracted with the Champions League around about that time. So I'd say Carabao Cups, you know, win 3 or 4 games in that, and you're in Europe as well, which is a shorter route than the next 26 games in the league. So that's a target as well, definitely.
Charlotte, what do you think about that? You know, journalists, the conversation online have all kind of talked about expectation being a problem. And I think what we've seen this season and this conversation as well, we've said actually expectation from within the playing squad's done wonders. You know, would you take seventh place right now if you offered it?
Right now? Right now. I think we're fourth, so that would be a terrible thing to do. By the end of the season, I don't know. I think it's interesting that the World Cup is like slap bang in the middle of the season. I don't know how that might disrupt our momentum. You know, we talked about it on one of the many podcasts that we do. I can't remember which. We're talking about whether or not the World Cup is going to upset momentum. I think I think about it and possibly, but also possibly not, because we had a great end of season and then a summer, and then we've just come back in and been great again. Yeah, okay, the first few games weren't perfect, but so a roundabout way of saying it really depends on where we're at in sort of Jan, but right now, no, I would expect us and hope that we are going to finish higher than seventh. I'm not going to turn my nose up at seventh, though. If we finish seventh, that's great. That is a massive improvement on the last 14 years, basically. Obviously, maybe not one of those Pardew years, but that's kind of a, that was a bit of a mad one. But yeah, I think we can push on higher than that.
I think I looked it up the other day in terms of the yearly 12-month total dating back to this time last year, and it was like something like 39 games they'd played in the year, in the calendar year, and they had 65 points. So you calibrate that to last season in the Premier League, and it's like fifth, sixth. I think it was like 6 points above what Man U got, who finished, where they finished sixth, and yeah, a little bit behind third, you know, 6 or 7 points behind the next leap up. So it's round about top six form at the minute. But the argument for saying that, like, Charlotte wants top four is that they've still got the powder dry. You know, you've got a record signing, Alexander Isak, who's currently trying to get fit again with his thigh injury. And if Eddie Howe can train him through December, drill him, get him bedded into a position to really make an impact, I mean, it looks like from the first two games he played, scoring at Liverpool, etc., he could make a huge impact. Then you've got a whole new player ready to go. And then Alan Saint-Maximin, you know, question marks about his dedication to his recovery recently, but then Eddie Howe has now said he's really knuckled down and got the recovery right this time. He's back in the team, fresh as a daisy. It's the middle, it's, you know, it's going to be, you know, he's going to be desperate to get going by December because they'll be so fresh. There's two massive attacking talents there who can really change games, who are going to be wheeled out fresh into the team if Miggy Almiron dips, or, you know, if anyone else dips. So there is an argument for saying that there's more to come, and then if they buy again in January as well.
And that's the thing about the World Cup, which I wanted to talk about. It's almost like, as a fan, terrible for lots of reasons, but also the fact that I'm going to miss my December, November football. But then Newcastle do have international quality players who will be there, but the vast majority of the squad are going to be at home with Eddie Howe. Most other top six clubs, or even other Premier League clubs, don't have that luxury. Someone like Chelsea, someone like Liverpool, almost every single player will either be away or the large majority of them. Do you think the World Cup comes at a perfect time for Newcastle, Simon?
Yeah, I do. I think Newcastle are one of the teams who can and exploit the disruption caused by the World Cup. I mean, obviously, they're going to have players there like Nicky Pope, but he'll be training in the warm weather. Probably not playing, we don't think, as a reserve. Trippier, a bit worried about him getting injured because I think he might have a big role to play for Southgate, especially with the current injuries. Bruno, you know, I mean, he could go all the way to the final with Brazil. I think Brazil are pretty much Boogie's favourites. And so you're a bit worried about him, the man who no one can get the ball off. And someone said he was unpressable the other day. So it was a good phrase to use about Bruno. So there are a few key men who are a little bit, you're a little bit worried about, but not in terms of, you know, being the Man U coach or the Arsenal coach, or the, you know, all the rest of the top teams. I think Newcastle have got more of a core of the squad definitely going to be having a rest and then doing a bit of gentle training and then really stepping it up when they go to Saudi Arabia and then having a couple of friendlies or at least one friendly and being ready for that. Hopefully the Carabao Cup next round after they've got through next week. So, yeah, I think it's probably going to help Newcastle more than it'll hinder them.
Comparatively. Charlotte, how are you feeling about the World Cup? Are you going to use it as a little therapeutic from football break and recharge your own match going batteries because you're at Southampton, it's a long trip, or you gutted?
I'm gutted. I'm loving watching us. I do think for the squad it's a good thing. I, you know, it's important that they get a break, and as I say, like, the intensity with which we play means that they probably do need a break. But I'm having so much fun at the games now that I haven't had in like years and years, maybe in my like match going memory. I don't think I've had as, yeah, Villa was, it was, I've said it on the free podcast on Sunday, it was like a festival atmosphere, like a carnival or something. It was just so much fun. So I will miss that. I don't think I'll be taking a break from like football because we still will be making content and podcasts and deep diving into our squad and things like that whilst the World Cup is going on. So I don't think I can just tap out of paying attention to football. But I think I am gutted on a personal level, but I think it's a good thing. I think it can be a really good thing for us.
Yeah. No, I agree. And the way that we play in particular and the demands placed on the players, it's a huge benefit. And I just think we'll go out and smash Leicester City on Boxing Day, if not whoever we play before them in the Carabao Cup, if we do get through. That's why I'm nailing us down for fourth place if things go badly. sorry, if things go well. If things go badly, I meant injury-wise, because you know, we're still very reliant on Callum Wilson, despite Isak, and you're really right to mention him, Simon. The fact that him and ASM haven't been part of this goal-scoring glut, when you say they're the Newcastle's best two attacking players alongside Callum Wilson, incredibly exciting indeed. Just want to touch, Simon, on your conversation that you referenced earlier with Darren Eales and Dan Ashworth. You know, was there much that you took away from that you weren't expecting? How was it for you?
Well, I kind of was impressed by the bold ambition and their willingness to say it immediately on their first introduction at the club and the press conference that we had, or the little huddle we had with about six or seven of us. It was immediate, like saying that. I think it was Ashworth who said there's no ceiling for this club, which is amazing to hear. You know, there's always been a ceiling at Newcastle for many years, and for someone to say we can go anywhere and we can challenge anywhere was a great thing. And you came across it. I mean, Ashworth got his computer out and explained the role. It just didn't really come across in the pieces we did, because it was so technical and organisational and stuff. But he got his computer out and told us what, you know, the big, you know, how he, you know, you see it on Coach's Voice. I'm the hub of a wheel, and I've got lots of spokes coming off me. And he talked through what his job description was and all the elements of the club that he was going to be delving into to make sure it functioned really well. And he explained asked him what Newcastle's DNA would be. And I think he's been criticised for the England DNA thing. But I mean, I've covered the under-21s for England for years. And I think what he set in place at the FA is absolutely brilliant. Total continuity from like under 15 level right to the seniors, and they know every player and every age group and who's doing what and where they are. And it's really set up like the pathway which Southgate's benefiting from now. So I came away thinking there's two seriously engaging football operators there, with a load of ambition, with the talent to drive the club on, and to get the right people in the right places to make it all work. And I mean, if you're going to pick, I interviewed Darren Eales when he was trying to sell Miguel Almirón to Newcastle, and found him really sparky then. So when he got the job, I thought that's absolutely brilliant. And when he communicates more with the fans will see that as well. And we saw him, had a brief word with him on Saturday as well. And he was like wide-eyed going, this is amazing, isn't it? You know, winning every time. And even he was like, saw the infectious nature of the crowd, and he's only been here a month, but he was standing on the touchline outside the dugout, you know, thinking it was fantastic. So yeah, two great operators there. And I think the benefits that Newcastle will see on the pitch and off it for several years now, as they get their feet under the table and start to build, really good to see.
Brill. Newcastle are scheduled to play at least one, possibly two friendlies in Saudi Arabia in December, I believe. Your thoughts on that? You know, last time you were on the pod with Charlotte, you both had a really informative chat about Newcastle's ownership and the direction that's going. You know, is this just something that you and colleagues just expect now? The club are going to play in that part of the world quite a lot moving forward.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, we know that Saudi Arabia are very serious about bidding for the 2030 World Cup, which is obviously next but one, is it? That's right. And that will be another Winter World Cup, so that'll be another controversial thing. But I think they're teaming up with a couple of other countries to do it. So I think they, as a nation, they're going to be wanting teams to go and train there, take the benefit of the winter weather, the cooler temperatures. I don't think it's cool ever, but oh, actually it is. It should be just about right when Newcastle visit. So I think they want to promote their footballing facilities. Newcastle went to Jeddah last time, and it looks like the friendly's going to be in Riyadh this time, which should be a very different experience from what you read about the two. And Jeddah's kind of a little bit more westernised and like Dubai, and Riyadh's kind of the seat of government and a little bit stranger. But they've got a lot of football facilities there and football schools, which Newcastle will be going to train in. So, I mean, Eddie Howe will make it a really serious trip. It'll not be messing around. It'll be their getaway to bond together again and reset and work on stuff to hit the ground running. It's only, you know, I think Man City are going to Abu Dhabi. I think if you are owned by a state or owned by a state-owned company, however you want to term it, you probably expect it to be going there once a year or twice a year for a training camp. So, and obviously that you know, that raises the question about the Saudi ownership again, which obviously when the friendly was announced, we asked, and obviously that, then that dies away again. So those questions still get asked, and they will continue to be asked. And Eddie Howe will continue to sidestep them as the diplomat he is, because he doesn't want to get involved, which is fair enough. And hopefully they'll have, I mean, everyone who came back, a couple of people said it was a bit of a strange place to go last time but the results improved dramatically after the Jeddah camp in January last year. So, yeah, I mean, it's to be expected with Saudi looking at football and to get a World Cup in 2030, they're going to want to have football teams over there training there.
Is it something you would go to? Like, would you follow the team out there? Are you interested? Firstly, do they invite journalists? And secondly, would it interest you to, like, be out there?
It would interest me to go and experience firsthand what Saudi Arabia is like. And maybe, I mean, if you're allowed to speak to all sides of the story, that would be great. They haven't invited us. And I think we need to check on that. We need to check on that this week. I think we've certainly discussed it as journalists. Like, do we need to be there? Should we go? Does Eddie Howe want us there? I mean, the key thing is, if Eddie Howe allows us to be there to have one day visiting players and doing interviews and doing an interview with him, it's worth us going. If we're just going to be hanging around the training ground and not getting any content or any interviews, then it's probably not worth us going.
With the autograph book, just hoping.
The autograph book, yeah. Or just videoing players going on and off buses, which is all the rage these days. not to mention anyone rivaling you. Or not rivaling you.
We don't have rivals. We're all friends.
Fearless, absolutely number one. So, yeah, we'll have to discuss whether it's worth going. I would like to go there and see what Riyadh's like and see whether football is really taking a hold and capturing the public's imagination and whether it's, you know, I mean, 35 million people there, a very young population, and we're told that they love their football and they've all been Man U fans in the past, but they're all going to come to Newcastle now. So it would be nice to see it firsthand.
We'll take them.
Yes.
We'll take them.
Let's finish off with some predictions then. Simon, based on what you've seen so far and what you think is to come, where would you put Newcastle at the end of this season? What do you think will happen then after Simon Charlotte? Same question for you, my friend.
I would love them to get top four and be in the Champions League. I think over the, and this is my natural Newcastle covering pessimism kicking in. I think top six. I think top six is definitely achievable. Even that's, you know, mixing up with one of the older elite. Who do you knock out of the top six? Liverpool, Man U? You know, take your pick. That's a tough job to do that over the course of a season. But top six, top four, dreamland. You know, give Eddie Howe freedom of the city if he gets that.
He can graze his cows wherever he wants. Let him do it. Is this what I want to happen or what I think will happen, Alex?
What you think will happen.
I think top six. I think we'll finish top six. I think maybe fifth. But I think we can do that.
These are great answers. You know, look at the bad luck with injuries, VAR, when we're still talking about Newcastle as a top six club. I think if Newcastle can keep Guimaraes and Wilson fit, they'll finish fourth, I think. Spurs, to answer your question, Simon, if you want a team to drop out of the top six, I think they're on borrowed time. They've a lot of poor performances this season. And I think the top four is Man City, Arsenal, maybe Newcastle. In third, I think Newcastle are third best team in the league at the minute. Yeah. And, you know, between third and fourth, I'd say Chelsea. And then I think the teams below. Let's see. We'll probably give you a shout at the end of the season, see who's got egg in their face, if anyone, because we're all friends.
Can we just register what a remarkable conversation this is to be having? Where we were having this conversation like a year ago, they hadn't won, had they? It was December the 4th when the first...
Haven't won a game until December, yeah, right.
I mean... We're talking about top four, top five. I mean, who cares what it is if it's top six after where Newcastle were last year? So what an amazing turnaround. What a remarkable conversation to be having 12 months on.
I know. It's amazing.
Thank you to Simon there and also to Charlotte, of course, as well. Thanks to you for listening to the True Faith podcast. If you like what we do, come and join us on Patreon. The link's in the description to this pod. You do us a massive favour by leaving us a 5-star review with a comment, if that is an option, wherever you listen, but particularly on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Helps us so massively. We'll be back Monday night after hopefully a massive win at St. Mary's to talk it all through with you. Cheers. Bye-bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.